Greetings, this is Byron Richards bringing you the weekly Wellness Update podcast, the health news that you can use. Well, I hope everyone was able to tune in and watch the Larry Lepton, the new superhero video. You'll be hearing a lot more, or I should say seeing a lot more from Larry and his adventures in the coming months. He is going to take on the forces of evil. And you will see him at his best, he and his family. I think you'll find it quite entertaining. All right, let's get to the news of the past week. Some interesting studies out. First one up, can inosine repair nerve damage? Now, inosine is one of these nutrients you seldom ever hear much about. Very few studies done on it. It's something that's in the family of the B vitamins, or at least that's how we would term it in terms of an energy-producing cofactor. However, your body makes it, so it's not technically a vitamin. A vitamin is something that you have to get, you know, from the diet. Vital amines, they don't just, your body can't make them. That's how they get classified as vitamins. But there are other substances that our bodies make that are vitamin-like in terms of their energy production. Coenzyme Q10 would be an example of that. And certainly, inosine is one. Now, inosine, I recall hearing many, many years ago a lecture by a female doctor who was, working with women and women-related issues, and she made the comment and that inosine was the single best supplement she had ever seen for helping to calm hot flashes. And I went ahead and used it for that purpose way back when and found she was right. It was a great supplement. And ended up putting that in our Female Plus product, which is where that's probably the only supplement I have today that has inosine in it. Although inosine, we can always get that as a separate nutrient. There's a very nice dose of it in that Female Plus product because we use it. It's really for women of any age, but it really does help women at the menopausal transition time with hot flashes. Okay, so at any rate here, this new study is quite fascinating because it relates to inosine and nerves. And what was found is that inosine actually has an ability to stimulate a compound, which in turn then initiates the repair of nerves. And I find this quite fascinating because, wow, I mean, this is another angle on how can we help nerves heal. Now, normally, inosine would be produced in normal energy production. But if you have someone who's tired, if you have someone who's fatigued, if you have someone who's been under pain for a while and now they're tired from that, which is obviously very draining, physical pain, you could, in fact, run an inosine deficit and then the nerve problem could get locked into place. So this is one where it's showing that the connections of the nerve neurons, the actual axons, require inosine as an ability to help stimulate the natural repair process. So that's a fascinating study, and I think it will be one that opens the door for strategies for improving nerves. We had that interesting study a week or so ago on iron in nerves, and so here we have one on inosine and nerves, and it's just opening the door for solutions for people with these nerve issues, because sometimes, you know, the nerves are the slowest healing tissue in your body, and you know, it takes 3 weeks to get nerves. Once you get nerves feeling better doing something, it still takes another 3 weeks to kind of get them to heal. You know, a sprained ankle, that's, you know, depending on how bad you sprain it, that's 3 to 10 days. Nerves are a minimum of 21 days for sprained nerves, and, you know, it just takes a little longer. So we're always looking for nutrients that can help facilitate this natural process, and it appears that inosine is one of them. 2-year antacid use results in weight gain. Well, isn't that interesting? 70% of patients taking proton pump inhibitor antacid medications, that's Prilosec, Prevacid, Acifex, Protonix, or Nexium, they gained an average of 8 pounds over a 2-year period. Well. I mean, these things are handed out to suppress the symptoms of gastro esophageal reflux disease, or GERD. Although, you know, most people who have this don't really have GERD. They just have symptoms. And the doctors give these things out. They're rampantly overprescribed in babies. You know, I mean, mild reflux and the inability to have the right flora, and then you throw some antibiotics in there, and you got a little baby all out of whack, where this baby starts out with some thrush and now has reflux symptoms. You've got to fix these things naturally. You can't go on these ridiculous medications that suppress the production of stomach acid. Stomach acid signals the pancreas to release pancreatic digestive enzymes. It is required for the normal motility and function of the digestive tract. It breaks down the large proteins, the phenylalanine, the tyrosine, the tryptophan that your brain needs in order to function, and then your metabolism needs in order to run. So here we see proof that these drugs are obesity producers. Yet in widespread use with no such warning, FDA, of course, now will take years before they warn the public on this, because, you know, the FDA doesn't want to get in the way of any drug company's drug sales. Aerobic exercise improves stiff arteries and fatty liver. Well, that's, you know, more reasons to exercise. First study, there were two studies involved with this posting I did. The first study is adults who are type 2 diabetic, age 65 to 83, with high blood pressure. And they worked up to performing 3 one-hour aerobic sessions at 70% of their maximum, which is fairly intense aerobic exercise. But it was found that the participants had no problem with this. They enjoyed it. In other words, they got fit as they went along and they built up this level of fitness. And it had a significant effect on their arterial stiffness. After just 3 months of exercise, they were able to actually change something, truly change something, not suppress the symptoms, but change it through exercise conditioning. Of course, nutrition works in harmony with exercise. That's how our bodies evolved. And so these things are, they make sense. You compare this to drugs, which force the body to behave a certain way and never fix anything, including blood pressure medication. I mean, certainly if some people need some blood pressure medication a little bit for a while, but that gives you time to get yourself well. You know, exercise gets you well. Well, that's what we're going for here. We're not going for patchwork. We're going for rejuvenation. And so this is very positive news for aerobics. And in the second study, they took obese, sedentary men and got them on a 4-week program of aerobic cycling. 4 weeks. Over that 4-week period, the first thing their body did was clear fat out of their liver. So, of course, fat in the abdominal area, which reflects fat accumulating in the liver, is the disease-producing fat that you just do not want at all, period, end of discussion. And the ability, I mean, obviously these obese men in 4 weeks didn't lose all their weight, but right away their liver got busy clearing out the disease-producing fat stuck within it. So again, here we see that even some exercise, your body will immediately put it to use to lower the disease aspects of a health problem. And that is, of course, very good news because it it means that you do not have to lose all of your weight to become significantly healthier. You just have to get on track, and your body will help you to do that. So exercise is a key aspect of this in terms of maintaining this health. New science questions the theory of antidepressant drugs. Well, this was certainly an interesting study. And it was very high-tech, advanced genetic gene array technology was used here to analyze the differences in a stressed group of mice and a depressed group of mice, and which genes were on and which genes were off. I mean, you know, this is really amazing science when you stop and think about it. I mean, 5 years ago, all of this kind of conjecturing about what was doing what would have simply been opinion. And now you've got hardcore advanced science showing you things that we never dreamed we'd see. It's really remarkable having mapped the human genome, what now able to do and what will be done in terms of analysis of information. And it's, of course, interesting and fascinating to me that all of this ends up proving the theory of natural health more than the drugs. So the drugs, you find right away that the drugs turn on and off all kinds of switches that they shouldn't be while they're, quote-unquote, doing what they're intended to do. And you find that nutrition activates the genes favorably that help and turns off the genes that don't help. It's an amazing thing that's, that new science is proving. And you don't hear this in the headlines, but that's actually what's going on with the science. Well, case in point are the antidepressant medications that are widely prescribed, the top-selling drug to children in this country, which is just beyond belief. They should be banned in children. I mean, when they put a black box warning on them in England and everyone said, oh, you can't take the children off antidepressants, there'll be so much more suicide. Well, guess what? There wasn't. No, none. No extra. You know, this little fear-mongering of the psych pill pushers, it just doesn't hold up. You know, there's lots of problems kids have. I'm not saying they're not. But a television set doesn't solve them. A lack of exercise doesn't solve them. A poor diet doesn't solve them. Having a good family does solve them. Having good parents, having guidance, having support. You know, I mean, there's a lot to do besides push pills down the throats of children that are a lot more effective than these drugs. At any rate, the new study showed that the drugs don't, in depression, the genes that are turned on are not affected by antidepressant drugs directly at all. And that's fascinating since they're, you know, used for depression. They affect stress. So if you're stressed, they'll have an effect on the neurotransmitters like a credit card does if you don't have any money to buy anything. That's about what good they are for the stress-related neurotransmitters, but they really don't affect the core gene switches involved with depression. They relate not to the neurotransmitters, but to the glial cells, the structure and function of the nerves and the inflammation, which we talk a lot about. This is just more science that shows that the genes involved with really feeling cruddy are in fact related to brain inflammation, glial cell function. And if you get those things repaired, activate your BDNF, the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, you will be a much happier, more stable person over the long term. So think, if you have to have one of these meds, short-term, temporary relief, buy yourself some time, get your health on track, get a long-term solution in place. You can do it. Okay, the pear shape is not so safe after all. Well, that's interesting. Women have for a long time been told, of course, that the midsection weight is the disease weight, which is true, actually. And gaining weight on their hips or thighs is not as bad as we call the pear shape instead of the apple shape. And this was a 10-year Danish study of 27,000 men and 29,000 women in the, between ages 50 to 64. They studied them for 10 years. And they found, interestingly, in the hip circumference in women was directly associated with an increased risk for life-threatening blood clots in the veins, deep vein thrombosis. And so this is one aspect of a serious problem that can lead, obviously, to life-threatening strokes and whatnot. But it was directly related to their their hip circumference, not their waist circumference. So while the waist circumference reflects inflammation piling up, hardening of the arteries, fat in all the wrong places, the hip circumference represents most likely a surplus of estrogen in women. This relationship was not found in men. But in women, when you have the extra fat on the hips and thighs, you're going to get extra estrogen production. And when you, because your fat cells will, which produce estrone, will convert that into estradiol. And so all of a sudden now you have surplus estrogen, and surplus estrogen, of course, is known to cause clots. So that's where that risk is coming from. But it certainly just the point being, of course, that excess weight, no matter where it is located, is just not a healthy thing. All right, I did a rather lengthy expose article on the FDA, Big Pharma, and doctors causing injury for profit. The current healthcare debate in this country misses the point on healthcare costs, at least some of the large ones. You know, both the Republicans and the Democrats don't seem to get this right. Every time you're listening to a Republican talk, it's all about reducing legal costs involved. And I'm sure there are legitimate costs that could be reduced in this regard. However, I will have to point out that if it were not for the lawyers suing the drug companies and through the discovery process, getting their documents and proving that these people knew they were causing harm and didn't report it, this is the only way this data is coming into the public light. We would never know this stuff. So I'm not a big fan of excessive costs run up by lawyers, but these are valid costs run up by lawyers in defense of the public safety. This is something that must continue for the time being because the FDA doesn't do its job on purpose. The FDA works in harmony with the drug companies to do everything it can to massage the data to make it look good to get the drugs on the market. You know, and then the big pharma hires celebrity doctors, pays them under the table. They hire off-label promoting drug reps to go out and sell these things. And these gullible doctors sit there writing off-label prescriptions for things that are dangerous. And we have at least $200 billion a year in fraudulent sales of drugs. Injuries they cause, and the cost of the lawsuits that wouldn't be needed if the FDA did its job in the first place and Big Pharma had a shred of integrity in its executives. So this article details all of the information relating to how this came to be. Many, many references in here. This is not just my little opinion of somebody who doesn't like these people. This is these are the facts about how this happens. So if you're interested in this subject, you should read this in detail because it will help you to understand exactly what's going on. I do the case in point here with the atypical antipsychotic medication. The atypical antipsychotic medication is one of many, but one of the top drug scams that has gone on here in this country, and it is a prime example of how the FDA works in tandem with Big Pharma and doctors, both doctors on the take and a bunch of doctors, especially psychiatrists, who prescribe these things in an unethical, immoral way, injuring patients all over the place and racking up tens of billions of dollars in profit. Even when they're fined, the fines don't begin to approach the false market they have created. And on top of that, most of the target for these ridiculously expensive drugs are Medicare and Medicaid patients, fully paid for by the taxpayers and the states. And this is where the costs are coming from. These drugs are bankrupting, this one class of drug is bankrupting states. And it's all fraud. It makes Bernie Madoff look like a beginner. This is way more money than he conned people out of. You know, on October 29th, 2009, AstraZeneca, the maker of the atypical antipsychotic Seroquel, paid $520 million. They agreed to pay $520 million to settle two federal investigations and two whistleblower lawsuits about their illicit, fraudulent clinical trials where they pay doctors to produce faulty garbage to get approval from the FDA, and for their rampant off-label promotion of this to the children and the elderly. You know, Eli Lilly, because they failed to warn anyone that Zyprexa can cause diabetes, paid already $1.2 billion in failure to warn lawsuits. And then on top of that, they just agreed earlier this year to $1.42 billion more. $615 million on that was to settle the Justice Department's criminal investigation, where they pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor for prescribing these, for pushing these on the elderly. And I might point out here that even a single dose of these to the elderly increases their risk over the next 12 months of a life-threatening event. In other words, it kills the elderly. And, you know, the penalty for this to Eli Lilly was a misdemeanor. Wow, that's really a tough thing here. You know, I mean, these are corporate white-collar crimes committed by boards of pharmaceutical companies against the American public. They kill people, and they get a misdemeanor. This, you know, at least we're doing something, mind you. These financial penalties, which started with Narayan, were unheard of a decade ago. Of course, this rampant illegal sales of drugs was unheard of. And it's just going on in many drugs. You know, Pfizer, $2.3 billion settlement, and they pleaded guilty to a felony. That the felony was related to Bextra, but also their Geodon, their atypical antipsychotic, was involved in this settlement as well. And Risperidol, which just went on trial this week. That's the other main atypical antipsychotic. Now, you would think that these trials and these problems are being put forth by the FDA. No, the FDA has nothing to do with this. This is lawyers, mind you, and independent researchers forcing the research into public view and correcting. This is all happening because the FDA refuses to do its job. It refuses to do its job, and thus it harms people. And in this case, it's harming children and elderly in droves. And these are the disadvantaged people that it's harming. And it sees this. I mean, we just had a study out last week by independent researchers showing that these atypical antipsychotics cause 18 pounds of weight gain in 12 weeks in children. Now, this has been known by the FDA since the beginning, but they always say, no, the data is not so good. We need more studies. It's not quite right, you know. So now independent researchers, not the drug companies, the independent researchers prove this. But how long did it take them? A decade to do the study. Why? Well, because the drug companies don't want to prove their drugs are as dangerous as they know they are. They can't sell them anymore. This is fraud, fraud, fraud. And this is ruining healthcare for a nation because we have to pay for all of this fraud. It's outright fraud. So somebody, you know, needs legitimate healthcare because they've been in an accident or an injury and they're uninsured or whatever. I mean, yeah, they can go to the emergency room, but they should have care. They should be able to get that. We're a society that can afford that for true emergency needs. You get into the cancer industry, that's another story. That's just as cockamamie as the atypical antipsychotics in terms of the fraudulent profits. So my point is, even the current healthcare system is riddled with fraud. And if you make it so that more people get automatic payment for things in a new healthcare system, the fraud mongers are just going to go wild. They've already bought the Obama administration. It's unbelievable that the Obama administration would jump into the sack with Big Pharma to go after and paint the health insurance as the villains. I'm no health insurance fan, but I'm not going to defend their executives and whatnot. But that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that the Democrats have for years wanted to hold the the feet of Big Pharma to the coals. They get in power, and the White House absolutely prevents reimportation of drugs at lower costs. You know, I mean, it's comical to see what the Democrats are doing to shoot their own political priorities in the feet for the purpose of what they're doing. I mean, this is something else to behold. At any rate, unless fraud is tackled head on, and we have $200 billion a year here in sanctioned fraud or semi-sanctioned fraud, then you have, you know, another $60 billion a year in criminal fraud where they're just putting in false claims to Medicare and Medicaid. That's a whole different racket. This is the actual dispensing of the drugs in a false way. Anyway, you see here, I get a little bit worked up on this, but I think it's worth it for people to get this because you know, neither the Republicans or Democrats report on the issue because they both are beholden to Big Pharma in one way, shape, or form. And so they don't want to talk about this issue, even though it is a elephant in the healthcare room. All right, enough of that. Adiponectin stops sepsis, relevance to H1N1 swine flu. Fascinating study here. Adiponectin is a hormone that comes out of fat like leptin. It's supposed to be in harmony with leptin, meaning that when you're healthy and you eat a meal, your adiponectin and your leptin levels rise together, and then they fall together, and they do the right things. Adiponectin helps your liver metabolize blood sugar. When you get leptin resistance, meaning that your leptin levels are elevating, you're hungry too often, you're gaining weight, your adiponectin levels drop. And that sets you up for insulin resistance, risk for type 2 diabetes. Fascinating stuff just right there. Now we come to find that for some reason, as yet unknown, they did not pinpoint the mechanism yet involved, adiponectin is required to clear toxic waste products from bacterial infections out of the body. What? Well, that's what the researchers found. So they found that when there's no adiponectin or low adiponectin and an animal gets sick and starts getting toxic from the germ waste products and the process that's going on, their blood gets so toxic it becomes septic and then they die. And if they have adequate adiponectin, if they give the animals adiponectin, it prevents the toxemia completely. This is groundbreaking. This is one of these things where, you know, the theory of Western medicine, it loves to have everything in nice, neat little categories. It likes immunity to be immunity and metabolism to be metabolism. Never the two shall meet. And it likes to compartmentize them down to the smallest little detail of what could be going on, a nice little cause-effect sequence of if this, then that's. And eventually you get down to what the problem is. It's a very nice little reductionist system of logic, except it has very little workability. And the more you learn about the human body, the more you see synergistic relationships between systems that are intertwined, and there's no way to unintertwine them, meaning that metabolism and immunity overlap all over the place. Well, that's not conducive to the theory of Western medicine at all. Amazing, but true. And here, this is just one example. We have a hormone that we thought was just regulating insulin and protecting the body from type 2 diabetes, and then all of a sudden we find out that it's critical for preventing life-threatening sepsis following an infection. What does this mean to you? It means get your leptin straight so that your adiponectin levels are up so that you're not susceptible to an intense infection. Should you happen to get sick with the flu, you won't get this higher risk for getting really toxic from the flu if you can maintain your adiponectin levels. Now, the best way to maintain adiponectin is, of course, to follow the 5 rules of the leptin diet. Many nutrients help boost it up. You know, they're not one-shot wonders. They work in harmony with the leptin diet and with exercise and whatnot. They would include quercetin, DHA, magnesium, resveratrol, grapeseed extract, mangosteen, banaba leaf, and most likely many others, because nature supplies an abundance of tools to promote health, and promoting adiponectin levels to be elevated or maintained at a proper rate is apparently extremely important, not only to your blood sugar metabolism, but to your immune system function. All right, we move now to the questions for the week. And if you have a question for me, please email it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. First question comes this week from Terry, who says, I've been working myself through anxiety issues for the past year, and I'm about 90% through it. Well, that's good, Terry. I have a coach that tells me to exercise lightly so I don't build my cortisol levels, and I told her I disagree and work out on the treadmill vigorously for 25 minutes and then a fast walk for another 20 minutes. I feel much better after the vigorous workout than a mild one, and took your advice since you mentioned it helps to loosen the muscles. Am I correct to do the more vigorous workout? Well, Terry, you are correct if you feel good during it, after it, and for the next couple of days. So the point being, you always want to do more vigorous exercise, allowing that your physical wherewithal to perform it and recover from it is adequate. And that those are the criteria by which you would do this exercise. So the idea that raising your cortisol levels from exercise would be harmful to you indicates that your coach just doesn't have any clue what they're talking about and hasn't gotten past kindergarten on the subject of cortisol. Cortisol is actually lubrication for the oil in your engine. It enables you to run without friction. So you want cortisol production, but when you get it, you want a good, healthy response to that. So if you exercise and you feel miserable, that means you either didn't make cortisol or what you made couldn't keep up with the demand of the exercise. So I'm always in favor of more intense exercise as long as you get a decent response to it. You also said that you started taking ashwagandha and it helps you with the anxiety. And you want to know if that's a cure or a patch for your remaining anxiety. Well, ashwagandha is an Ayurvedic herb. We use it in Thyroid Helper. I really like it a lot. It has a balancing effect on the adrenal gland, so it would contribute to restoring nerve function. When you say, is it a cure or a patch, it's a tool. It's a tool to help, like many nutrients. There are tools to help you balance your stress, keep your nerves in track. When you exercise, both doing the aerobics and hobbies, don't forget hobbies with your fingers, which help to program your brain into stability and are wonderful for anxiety. But when you do exercises and your body learns new nerve connections, that's the cure. The nutrients help facilitate that. You mentioned you're taking a lot of our products. That's great, ranging from the B vitamins to Relaxamag, Calcium AEP, CoQ10, Repair Plus, Quercetin, all these things very helpful towards this goal. You could consider even some Noni or even Sleep Helper during the day, which is really good. And again, with any kind of nutrients, you're just seeing, well, how well do they work when I need them? In other words, you can take, if you're feeling some anxiousness, some Relaxamag and or Calcium AEP right when it's happening, or even combine that with some B vitamins, and you may find that, poof, 5 minutes, it's gone. You may not find that. So you're trying to find strategies that help. And when you get it right, you'll be able to get through a day, even a more stressful day, better. And your baseline week in and week out amount of anxiousness should gradually settle down. And Terry, in your case, you've already done a great job, and this should help you get the rest of the way. Abdul writes in from Bahrain and says, I'm a listener to your very informative podcast. My question, I have an enlarged prostate. I've been taking saw palmetto for the last 5 years. I'm 63 years old. Lately, the frequency of nightly waking up has been increasing. It used to be 2 times. Now it's 3 or 4. Is there nutritional supplements you would recommend to help with this condition? By the way, having tried many brands of supplements over the years, I think Wellness Resources is the very best. Well, Abdul, so do I. And thank you for your comments. As far as your prostate goes, saw palmetto is terrific. However, if you're seemingly not seeing it go in the right direction, my two favorite supplements to help men with prostate are, besides saw palmetto, Repair Plus and Preventer Plus. And these nutrients I've used time and again over the years and found them to be incredibly helpful. And so the Repair Plus has bromelain, papain, a little bit of quercetin, and some curcumin in it. And the Preventer Plus, again, has a little bit of quercetin and has indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane. Those are the broccoli-like derivatives that have a profound effect on estrogen and androgen metabolism. And some green tea catechins, the high-quality ones. So anyway, that's the strategy that I've used for a long time. Find it extremely helpful. And of course, zinc is another important nutrient. In fact, Abdul, you might read my article on the prostate health and the androgen receptor, which you can find on our website. Kim says, I have an exercise question. This morning I woke up after having 8 hours of sleep. I'd not eaten since 8:30 p.m. the previous evening. I went to bed about 1. When I went to bed, I was slightly hungry. I was up for an hour and decided to exercise. While exercising, I was very slightly hungry. Post-treadmill, I'm not hungry still. It's lunch. I'm still not hungry. Should I wait for a hunger signal before I eat, or is my leptin messing with me as usual? Well, Kim, you know, it's an interesting question, because I often say, as you obviously know, wait for a hunger signal following exercise to eat, because if exercise turns on fat-burning systems, you want it to go ahead and let it burn fat until you're hungry. Now, maybe that's 5 minutes after the exercise, and then you better eat, or maybe it's hours after the exercise, which is the case in your situation, but you're saying, well, now you've gone, you know, 16 hours without eating. Well, you know, the whole idea behind the five rules of the leptin diet, which is 3 meals a day, was to get people to quit eating all the time. Now, you could make a case for 1 meal a day or 2 meals a day on the leptin diet if a person felt good doing that. That's the key here. So in your question, if you feel good and you're not, you know, dizzy and weak and lightheaded, and now when you finally do eat, then you eat like the house down the rest of the day because now you've started eating. In other words, the system's out of whack. If that's happening, well, no, that's not working out so well for you. However, if you get a hunger signal around lunch after this, now you eat, and then maybe you have one more meal that day because it's later in the day. Now you're on a 2-meal day because you didn't eat earlier, and you felt good the whole time. That is completely fine, Kim. Completely fine. So, and maybe even desirable. Heidi says, "My palms are always damp, and it gets worse if I'm anxious or nervous, such as going on a date or at a job interview. This is very embarrassing, and I don't know what to do. I'm 20 years old, in good health, other than I'm about 30 pounds overweight. I read that you could put antiperspirant on the hands to dry them, but I don't want the chemicals and residue getting on me. Is there a nutritional approach you could recommend?" Well, Heidi, the sweaty palm problem is you know, common. What it means is that your internal system is running hot. And so your sympathetic nervous system is a little bit too wound up. Your basic nerves are set a little on high, like on alert. So then you get in a different or unusual situation, or maybe something that means something to you, like the date or the job interview. And of course, because you can't predict that entirely, now your nerves get a little even more wound up, and so your baseline amount of sweating increases. And then once the sweating increases, the fact that the sweating increases even causes you to feel more stressed, and then it increases the sweating even more. So the bottom line of it is that your body is running, its baseline temperature is too hot in the first place based on your nerves being too wound up. So, you know, really, you've got to calm down the nerves. The Relax-A-Mag is very good. Calcium AEP is very good. Adequate B vitamins are very good. And antioxidants, like our Daily Protector, will help to help your body make energy instead of heat and free radicals. And those would be basic things. You want to get a good level of relaxation in, refreshing exercise. Being 30 pounds overweight will overactivate your sympathetic nervous system, although you could have this problem being normal weight or underweight. But overweight contributes to it as a percentage of the problem, Heidi. How much is anybody's guess? Could be 10% of the problem, could be 50% of the problem. More likely than not, you've had instability in your life as you were growing up, and this has caused you to want to try to, you know, maintain control of as much of your life as you can, but have struggled historically with that. So you need new recordings. You will find as you get older and you get more comfortable in these situations and you go through them more often, that you will eventually, especially if you have good nutrition, overcome all of this. It may take a few years. It may take a few months. You can speed the process along with consistent exercise and calming activities, relaxation. Again, hobbies are really good for this, but that will help you out a lot, Heidi. Okay, we have a number of skin questions that have come in, three different ones, all of them fairly lengthy, and I'm going to take them up simply because it covers a lot of ground. And I want to make a few points about skin before I answer these questions that apply to all of the questions being asked. The skin can have problems within itself, meaning that the nerve endings can irritate it, inflammatory chemicals coming out the nerves can irritate the skin. So stress can be always be a factor in skin issues directly. External things coming into contact with the skin can be a problem. The signature of bacteria and yeasts on the skin themselves can be a problem that are often problems with chronic skin issues. The skin is part of the mucosal immune defense system, so that would coincide with digestive issues along the lining of the digestive tract, sinus issues along the lining of the sinuses, and for women, vaginal issues, respiratory issues. The immune system that functions on the surface of the skin is the same immune system that functions in all of these other areas of the body. On the surfaces. And so stress in one area can lead to stress in the other. You have at least 700 different bacteria and yeasts living on the surface of your skin, and they have to be kept in harmony, just like gut bacteria have to be kept in harmony. And so there's a lot going on here that is beyond what meets the eye. Then we have the issue that skin is a secondary elimination system for waste products. So anytime I'm dealing with a chronic skin issue, no matter what it is, we're looking to the liver and to the digestive tract as likely sources of the skin problem. So we have the mucosal immune system, we have the liver and the digestive tract as underlying problems, and then we have things we can do to help circulation and the skin itself. These are all factors that will vary from person to person with any skin problem, but they are key most of the time to solving that person's skin problems, no matter what they are. So that's some background for you. Now, the first question here comes from Amy, and she says, my podcast is awesome. Well, thank you, Amy. And she says, well, she's had cystic acne since her teens. She's now 31. She's taken every acne prescription, including Accutane, and she says, please, listeners, do not ever take this. I would, of course, concur. She's still trying to repair and recover from the damage that it caused her body. She says she's been doing everything to heal the acne in her body, to support her lymph system. She has used the Immune Plus. She's used enzymes. She's done rebounding, exercise, dry skin brushing, breathing, fresh air daily. Done a lot of stuff that's good for her to help her lymph. She's taking probiotics, enzymes, multiple vitamins, MSM, stress helper, doing all kinds of things to help the nerves. But she says her skin is dull and lifeless. She has deep vertical fingernail ridges, that thinner hair, and severe menstrual cramps. This all leads, she says that this all leads to her to what she considers to be the culprit, which is 12 years of a diet ranging from lacto to ovo-vegetarian to vegan. She says she's been taking the blood builder for about 6 months, and it's really helped her menstrual cramps. But after months of research and reading, she's now considering adding 100% grass-fed red meat to her diet. She wants to know if I have any other ideas or suggestions on how to improve her skin. She wants to know if I have worked with long-term vegetarians, vegans who improve their health by reintroducing meat, and she appreciates the feedback. Well, yes, of course, for some people, reintroducing meat has a huge benefit to their health, and they notice that they just feel better on it. Other people don't feel better on it, and so they need to find options. So it's really an individual thing, but for some, it really does make a difference, and they just feel much better eating that way. As far as your skin goes and the amount of menstrual-related issues you have, you can assume that the fueling point, especially since it's still age 31 and you're having this problem, is you have inappropriate androgen surges at your ovulation, which are fueling the acne problem and helping to sustain it. So I would use Female Plus to help smooth out the regulation of your menstrual cycle. I would consider iodine, although you never know. Sometimes iodine really helps clear up acne. Other times it doesn't. So, but it's worth a try. And, you know, you're doing a lot of good things, but you've got to really still work on smoothing out the menstrual cycle and having enough energy to run it. Of course, protein is required to run your menstrual cycle. That's why the extra dietary protein may be of use. But then you're into other kinds of nutrients that would help smooth out the regulation thereof. And so Female Plus would be my next choice in this regard, Amy. And of course, you would also want to see if zinc is helpful or not. And to help clear up problems, you might consider taking some oregano oil orally, which will work to help clear out the problems that exist. But you have got to get the smoothness of the signaling system, because you're getting androgen surges. And so that's often reflective of cystic ovaries or something else going on with the signaling. So, you know, that's where the iodine helps. Iodine is needed by the ovaries to function. But following the leptin diet is critically important. You cannot snack between meals. You cannot eat after dinner at night because you don't have any margin for error here. Jenna says, I am an Australian girl completing a naturopathy degree at the university and find your podcast immensely helpful for my studies. So thank you very much for providing such an awesome free resource. Well, you're welcome, Jenna. I would like to know about a couple of benign skin disorders that I have trouble with. Apparently they are quite common. First is keratosis pilaris. It's persistent. These are hard goose pimply bumps that often occur on the back of people's arms, but I have them all over my body, including my face. I know it is contributed to by a genetic mutation, and I've had it my entire 20 years of life, but would like to know if it could be improved. Using natural moisturizers, exfoliating, avoiding synthetic clothing helps reduce the redness and irritation. I also have a potent fish oil and cod liver oil, eat plenty of protein, and drink lots of water. I always make sure to get enough sun. My diet and lifestyle is clean, yet my skin is still so rough and unaesthetic. Well, Jenna, the problem, the keratosis pilaris, as you're calling it, there's an excess production of keratin, which is in fact genetic, or so it is believed, and so that's what you're working around. You find that just removing and being gentle with the skin helps to settle it down, which is reflective of the amount of inflammation that this problem causes in your skin. The best skin antioxidant, anti-inflammatories would be quercetin and daily Super E, the tocotrienol form of vitamin E. And I would highly recommend these to you. You know, there's no data showing that they get rid of this problem because it is, in fact, genetic. But you need to settle the skin down as part of your issue. And let me read the other part of your question here. The second skin issue you're talking about, pityriasis rosea, which is this, as you describe it, a salmon-colored, flaky, slightly raised patch appearing on any part of your body, and eventually, and it can spread, by the way, and then it can eventually disappear. This condition, well, scientists think it might be a virus. It's hard to say. But, you know, this is more of a rashy type issue, but it's similar to the other problem in that it shares common features of inflammation. You know, you notice that eating sucrose or wheat flares it up. Well, what does that tell you? Right away, that gives you a digestive connection to your problem. You say you've had this second problem started at puberty. When a problem starts at puberty, always hormones are involved. That means higher levels of estrogen made this problem worse. Higher levels of estrogen fuel inflammatory issues. Higher levels of estrogen suppress your T suppressor cells, which is why women have 10 times the rate of autoimmune disease than men do. So, you know, so now you get this other inflammatory problem fueled by estrogen, and that's sitting on top of the baseline problem you've had all of your life. But yet you notice that sugar and wheat can make it worse. And so you have to know right away that you have most likely had a problem with Candida albicans since your birth, meaning you were a colicky baby, you had rashes, you had antibiotics, you had something going on since this time. Maybe your mom just had an infection and passed it along. That happens. Whatever the issue is, you've lived with it your whole life. The reason that you can tell is that when you know that wheat's triggering the problem, you can bet that the gluten in wheat is going through a scar-like filament in your colon called transglutaminase. And what that is doing there is it's attaching a shell over the top of yeast, which gives you a chronic underlying Candida albicans infection in the lower colon. And so you can tell here that your skin problems are being hugely aggravated by long-term digestive tract issues. Yes, I understand that you're eating well, but you have to actually go after this issue and try to knock it out and get some help here with this. So you could consider trying some oregano oil. You could consider something like monolaurin, candida helper, calcium AEP. There's a lot of things you can try here, but you need to attack the digestive issue, and most likely the source of your problem. You need extra dietary fiber even beyond what you're eating. You need supplemental fiber, like Fiber Helper, so that you can clear estrogen more efficiently. That will help reduce that. And you need extra vitamin D. I know you're saying you're getting the sun, but you want your D levels tested. You want to get it up in the middle to higher end of the normal range because your inflammation tolerance isn't good. So you need the vitamin D higher. And these things will really help settle these problems down. And they will then help assist your situation, Jenna. So let me know how that goes. By the way, if I didn't mention it here, I do have a great class on Candida albicans that you can watch on the website. Okay, Cindy, the final question here. Cindy has two-part question. She says, my daughter-in-law had a bad case of rosacea, and they put her on antibiotics for several months. Is there anything that can be done naturally for rosacea? Rosacea is, of course, the red, splotchy, breaking capillaries on the chin, the cheeks, the nose. And by far, the one single best remedy for rosacea is grape seed extract, high-quality grape seed extract. You can use it in Cardio Helper or our PIC 50 product. And getting it up between 300 and 600 milligrams a day does wonders for the breaking capillaries and that problem. Of course, you have to look to what the stressors might be. Is it nerve stress that's triggering it? That's common. So a lot of times with rosacea, it's a combination of emotional stress and wear and tear combined with not having the ability to maintain capillary integrity in the face. And so the grapeseed extract restores the capillary integrity, and then you're looking for what is punching the face and the nose. And so that could most likely be stress, is what I found, Cindy. So stress helping nutrients, Stress Helper, Daily Energy Multi, calming nutrients, Relaxamag, calcium AP, whatever. These things are very helpful. And then Cindy says, my uncle has a very bad case of eczema, and they cannot do a very badly needed knee replacement because of the medication he is on for the eczema. Is there anything he can do naturally to treat the eczema? Thank you for your help. I love to download and listen to your MP3s of the show. Thank you so much for all the information you pack into each show. All right, Cindy, obviously your uncle is on immune-suppressing medication of one form or another in an effort to try to put out the forest fire burning in his skin, causing the scaly, itchy rashes of eczema. And, the best nutrients by far to support eczema in this situation. Now, it's not a cure. It's not a treatment. It's just a nutrient that helps the skin's structure and function would be squalene. Squalene at 6 capsules a day can be very helpful. It's not a cure-all, but it can be very, very helpful. It's the first thing I would try for him, because if he can get his skin better, fine. Quercetin is good for the itching, so he could do a combination of squalene and quercetin, 6 to 9 a day on the quercetin. If he can get this under control with nutrition, and of course you can use lots of things. You can use a skin rejuvenator to help with the structure of the skin as well. I mean, you can do a bunch of things here. But if you can get the immune system and the skin to calm down naturally and so on, then the doctors may be able to lower the doses of those immune-suppressing medications. And then, you know, they don't want to do the operation because if he gets an infection and he's on these immune-suppressing medications, he's in real trouble. And so they, those are tips I would try. Start there, see how it goes. You can always do more things, but that's, you know, a lot of times the basic things work. All right, well, that's it for your questions this week. Once again, if you have a question for me, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. You all have a great and healthy week, and I'll be back next week with more health news that you can use.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated, copyright 2008, all rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.